This is number 0023, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. This is indeed me, Peter Anthony Holder, and this is another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0023. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File, we'll meet Brian Peters from NoDebtWorldTravel.com. He's traveled the world on an extremely small budget, and he's had some adventures along the way, including marriage proposals.
The marriage proposals came from normal Ethiopian women who saw that I was American and would come up to me and ask me, hey, do you want kids? Are you married? And gorgeous women at that too. So the idea flashed through my head, but my good side took me home.
Michelle Cimino is the author of Netiquette, Online Etiquette. Be careful what you put online about yourself.
I think a lot of people that are on now forget that what they do now will have consequences in the future, whether it's college admission, whether it's employment opportunities, or just reputation-wise.
We'll hear from Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation.
No name, no number, guess what? I'm not answering. Hi, this is Steve Walsh. You know, your guy in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. You're going to want to stick around for my two-minute tirade. Oh, you're going to love it. It's coming up later on, right here on the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Plus, there's Andrew Fizakis, the night sky guy, and an idiot of the day. The guests later on this edition of the Stuff File, the person who told you this was show number 0023, is Merv Williams, a broadcaster and the morning show producer on Montreal's classic rock station, Shom FM 97.7. And I thank you very much, Merv, for doing the slate on this edition of the Stuff File program. Let's get right to the stuff, because we have lots and lots of stuff, as usual. We start off with a story from Mexico City. Police in Mexico City have rescued 150 ferrets from armed robbers after a high-speed chase. Police say they found the furry contraband after the suspects crashed their car into a tree and then fled on foot. 14 boxes of ferrets imported from the United States were taken by force by three robbers from a truck after it left the Mexico City airport. Two suspects are under arrest and another had escaped. Police said that a veterinarian who purchased the ferrets reclaimed them. The ferrets were unharmed. Did they know they were even stealing ferrets or just stealing a truck? That's what I want to know. Meanwhile, speaking of stealing, sheriff's deputies in Central Florida found a suspected car thief playing the Grand Theft Auto video game and later charged him with Grand Theft Auto. Polk County deputies investigating the theft of a 1998 Dodge Durango arrested 30-year-old Michael Ray Eakes. They found the SUV outside a Haines City home. Eakes was inside in the house playing the popular video game. Eakes was charged with Grand Theft Auto, burglary, and drug possession. At the time of his arrest, he was out of jail on bond on another Grand Theft Auto charge. I assume he does better in the game than he does in real life. Meanwhile, we go to another part of Florida. A 49-year-old woman has been jailed in Pasco County, accused of stealing a car on her first day out of prison. Teresa Jones faces charges of grand theft of a motor vehicle, cocaine possession, and two counts of possession of drug paraphernalia. She was being held on $7,300 bond. Jones was released from Lowell Correctional Institute in Ocala on Wednesday at the end of a 2-year, 8-month sentence. Authorities said she met a pen pal and they drove to the New Port Richey Hotel. Remember back in the days when having a pen pal was an innocent, fun kind of thing? Anyway, Jones took the man's car Wednesday night, saying that she was going to buy beer. She was located Thursday morning. Jones told authorities that she stole the car so she could get drugs. Meanwhile, in Pennsylvania, an eastern Pennsylvania man was charged after he allegedly broke into a home, cut his hair, and prepared fried chicken before being discovered. The man was charged with breaking into the home in Easton, which is about 50 miles north of Philadelphia. According to court documents, the homeowner returned home Sunday to discover him watching TV and cooking chicken. Authorities said the man threw a rock through the front window to get inside the house and appeared to have rummaged through every room in the place. He also took a shower. The man faces burglary, criminal trespass, and other charges and was being held on $15,000 bail. But hey, his hair was neatly groomed and he was clean. Okay, let's check out those wacky Brits and some of their crazy, kooky laws. The Kirklees Environmental Health Department, that's in West Yorkshire, England, they cited farmer Ronald Northcliffe, age 65, in 2008 for inadequate lighting in his barn, which inspectors said failed to meet the psychological needs of his one cow and his calf. Now, in his formal appeal, heard in October of 2009, Northcliffe noted, unsuccessfully, I may add, that he has had a clean record as a farmer for 30 years, and that, in fact, he in his own house lives fine without electricity, and he doesn't see why his cows would need electricity. After his defeat, Northcliffe's lawyer sighed, "I still have no idea just how much lighting is appropriate for a cow." Pal, I have no idea either, but that's kooky wacky England for you. And while we're in England, across the pond, here's another one for you. The Great Yarmouth Sea Life Centre in Norfolk, England, lowered the water level in its giant aquarium for Christmas because the big turtles, which are herbivores, were scheduled to receive their annual holiday treat of Brussels sprouts. Now, officials know from experience that if they fail to lower the water level, the gas bubbles from the powerful turtle emissions, that's a nice way of saying turtle farts, will lift the water high enough to trigger the emergency tank flooding buzzers. There you go. They've learned from experience. That must have been a fun time, huh? Okay, back on this side of the pond. We go to Chicago, the Windy City. In Chicago, a driver cutting across lanes to make his exit caused a crash in which a milk truck rolled over and spilled its entire cargo, hundreds of gallons of milk. Three vehicles, including the milk truck, were headed south on Route 53 when the driver in the far left lane, a 22-year-old man, figured out that he was about to miss his exit. So he tried to cut his Toyota Highlander SUV across the lane to the right, and the adjacent car swerved, trying to avoid a collision. But in avoiding one crash, the second vehicle, a Mazda sedan, collided with the milk truck. The milk truck driver lost control of the truck and it tipped over on its right side. The drivers of the Mazda and the milk truck were taken to a local hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. Of course, the idiot who caused all of this, the driver of the Toyota, was uninjured, and he was cited for improper lane change. Still, you'll be glad to know that police are happy to observe that despite the massive volume of milk spillage, nobody who witnessed the accident actually cried over it. Okay, we have one more story before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program. Let's talk a little bit about travel. Over the last 22 months, Ralph B. White of Los Angeles has traveled to the mountains of Nepal, the Australian outback, the Chinese-Mongolian border, a Rwandan volcano, Iceland, Benin, and the waters off Zanzibar. What makes this so unique is that Ralph has been dead the entire time. No, it's not Weekend at Bernie's. It's his ashes that have been traveling since his death in 2008, and his fiancée, family, and friends have been sprinkling bits of Ralph all over the world. So instead of a bucket list, Ralph's got an ash log that is about 6 pages long. Ralph's fiancée, Rosalie Lopez, says rather than having people mourn him, he wanted to give people incentive to go have adventures. And while Ralph covered a lot of the earth during his life, most of these scatterings have delivered his ashes to new territory. Lopez says she doesn't know exactly how long Ralph's ashes will last, but she and the family hope that future generations and grandchildren will one day get to take bits of Grandpa to a new and exciting place to scatter him a little more. That is both romantic and icky at the same time. And while we're talking about travel, it's freezing outside and you'd love to get out of town, but there's one problem. You don't have a job. No problem for Brian Peters. In fact, he says this may be the best time to hit the road and explore the world. Peters traded his unexpected plunge off the corporate ladder for a four-month-long trip around the world. From marriage proposals in Ethiopia to sleeping on buses in Cambodia, Brian explored the world on a shoestring budget, living the maxim that world travel requires time, not money. He has a blog called NoDebtWorldTravel.com, and via the wonderful world that is Skype-to-Skype communications, Brian Peters joins us on The Stuff File. Hi, Brian. How are you?
Good to be here. Thanks, Peter.
Thanks for being on the program with us. So a lot of people have been in situations where they've left jobs. They spend a lot of time wondering where their next paycheck is going to come from and what they're going to do for a career. You decided to just travel around the world.
Yep, absolutely. I had been thinking about it for a while, and things just fell into place for me. The company that I was with them for 8.5 years before I left, and they came to me and said, hey, we're going to give you some notice. We're going to let you go in 6 months. And I said, well, I'm not sure if I want to run right back into corporate America. What do I really want to do with myself? And I said, you know, I like to travel. I want to see a lot of different places, and I decided to take off and do it.
Okay, so the underlying part here is the fact that you were unemployed and you went to travel. The fact is you did it on a shoestring budget. So just how did you do that?
Multiple ways. The first way is a round-the-world ticket. And when people hear that, they generally assume that it's expensive, out of reach of, you know, most people, which in this case, and in most cases, it's not. You can get a round-the-world ticket, and by round-the-world, I mean you cover or you cross both the Atlantic and Pacific in one trip. You can get a round-the-world ticket for as low as $1,500 U.S., and that will take you around the world. The ticket price really depends on your locations, where you decide to go. But there are tickets that cheap. The other thing I did was that I spent a lot of time in hostels. And a lot of people think of hostels. They think of the movie. They think of young kids. They think of all these things that are not really associated with hostels. They really come out of the movies and out of fiction. Hostels and hostel beds can cost as low as, I spent $12 a night in Thailand, up to about $30 a night in Tokyo. Now, when you compare that to what, you know, a 3-star hotel would cost, your money really goes a long way when you do the hostels as opposed to doing a normal hotel room. So those are my two main methods of saving money on the road.
Now, when you mentioned going around the world or around the world ticket, how many stops does that allow you on an around the world ticket?
It really depends on how you decide to do it. It could be as many as 16. It could be as few as 5. There's really no limit. It just depends on where you want to go. And, of course, that's going to vary the cost. But in terms of a limit, there is none. The only limit there is that most round-the-world tickets require you to visit all of the all of your stops within a one calendar year. So that would be the only limitation. But in terms of where you can go, there are no limits.
Now, you've got this website I mentioned, our blog. It's NoDebtWorldTravel.com. You've also got an ebook, No Debt World Travel, The Ultimate Guide to Traveling Around the World, Even in an Economic Downturn. Was it your intention when you first started doing this that you were going to chronicle this trip, or was that something that came to you along the way?
It's a funny story. The blog started for me as a way to keep in touch with family and friends as I traveled. And then I started to get more and more people who I didn't know beforehand who started following the blog. And so it grew from there. And then when I got back home, I said, you know, what do I want to do with myself? And I said, I always wanted to write a book. And this seemed like the perfect topic. I just come home from the trip, and there were still a lot of people who were asking me questions via the blog and via email about the trip and how to do it. And I decided to put it all together for folks like me who, you know, had no concept of hostels, around-the-world tickets, and how to take care of myself on the road. So I decided to really put it all together after I came back.
Now, I mentioned in the introduction that you've had marriage proposals in Ethiopia and you slept on buses in Cambodia. Tell us about some of the things that you actually did do on this trip.
Oh, boy. So many things. In Hawaii, my first stop was Hawaii from New York, and I went to Mauna Kea, which is the technically it is one of the tallest mountains in the world if you measure it from the seafloor to the mountaintop. So we were looking down on the clouds. It was incredible. In Cambodia, someone at the place I was staying at decided to invite me to his sister's wedding reception. So I was the only non-Cambodian in a wedding reception, and it was fantastic. I had a great time, and you know, really enjoyed seeing a different culture's wedding and the different cultural aspects of that. Went to South Africa and experienced that. I bounced around Europe for a little while. Just so many different experiences and things that I really thought about and decided that I was going to do because I had lost the job. And I feel that me losing my job was a blessing, whereas most people consider that a curse.
Okay, I have to ask you about that marriage proposal in Ethiopia, by the way. How did that come to be? And I'm assuming you said no.
I did, but it was tempting. And before I got to Ethiopia, I didn't know what would happen when I got there. I just wanted to go to Ethiopia because I heard so much about it, and I wanted to experience it for myself. I had seen so much on the internet and TV, and I felt like there was another side that I wasn't seeing. And when I got there, I was correct, because when a lot of people think of Ethiopia, they think of, you know, kids in the street dying and flies everywhere, and far from it when I got there. The marriage proposals came from just normal Ethiopian women who saw that I was American and would come up to me and ask me, hey, do you want kids? Are you married? and gorgeous women at that too. So the idea flashed through my head, but my good side took me home. But Ethiopian women were very gracious and took care of me. So, and the Ethiopian people in general, really, really wonderful people. So I had a great time there.
Had you done much traveling before you took this trip?
I did some travel. I did primarily group travel. My round the world travel was by myself for the most part. Before this, I did group tours to places like Egypt and Brazil, Ghana, Mexico. So I did some travel, not extensively as I did with my round the world trip, but when I did do it, it was primarily with groups.
You said for the most part this trip was done solo. So did you have people who joined you along the way, or did you meet up with friends, or what?
Just one person who met me towards the tail end of the trip. She met me in London, and then we did London in a couple of days, and then we went to Barcelona for a week, and then we did Morocco for a week. We went to Marrakesh and had a great time. So she did a lot in 12 days.
Okay, so you had this round the world ticket, $1,500. All said and done, you're an unemployed guy. How much did you spend to go around the world?
Between the ticket itself and my accommodations, my ticket was not $1,500. You can get tickets as low as that. But with my locations, I spent about $5,000 for my ticket. Mm-hmm. But when you consider that I went to 13, 14 different countries on that $5,000, that's an incredible bargain, especially when you consider what a round trip ticket from each of those locations back to New York would be. And with the accommodations, with the hostel, I spent about $2,000, $2,500 on accommodations for 4 months. I spent, I would say, $8,500 US in total.
That's not bad at all.
No, considering, again, considering all the places I went to.
Would you do it again?
Absolutely. I would do it in a heartbeat. There were many places I would like to get back to and many places I didn't see. I didn't get to Australia on this trip. I've been to Brazil before. Would love to get back to Brazil. Haven't been to India, and I would love to get to India. And Japan and Tokyo and Paris were two of my favorite places. And you wouldn't have to pull me along to get me back to those places.
And when exactly did this trip take place?
This was from October 2008 to February 2009.
So I assume when you got back home, you found work again.
No, actually, what I've been doing is I've been working on my book and working on my blog and getting myself together as a travel blogger. and really pursuing that, because I didn't want to go back to corporate America. I wanted to try my hand at something different, something new, and see if I can make a go at this.
So you found a whole new career for yourself.
Absolutely. Excellent. Absolutely. Again, and that's why I say that the whole trip was a blessing, because I had been thinking about what I wanted to do. Yeah, again, I've been in my career since I left school, and I've been in my last location for 8.5 years. So I've been thinking about if this is something that I want to pursue full-time or if I want to stay in my old profession. I decided to go with the maxim, fortune favors the bold, and try something new. So,
and we should mention that your blog was recently named one of the best round-the-world travel blogs for 2009 by Boots and All. So congratulations on that.
Thank you. Thank you. It's really gratifying to know that people find the information on my blog worthwhile and helpful, because I know when I was researching everything, I had to bounce around to different websites and read different books, and I wanted to have a place where someone can get all the information in one spot. So that's what I tried to achieve.
The blog is NoDebtWorldTravel.com, and the ebook is No Debt World Travel, The Ultimate Guide to Traveling Around the World, Even in an Economic Downturn. Brian, I thank you very, very much for being on the program with us.
Thank you. Thank you. Really appreciate it.
That was Brian Peters, who has the blog NoDebtWorldTravel.com. He's also the author of the ebook No Debt World Travel, The Ultimate Guide to Traveling Around the World, Even in an Economic Downturn. You can find the links to Brian's site by going to mine. That's thestufffile.com. And of course, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, thestufffile.com. You're listening to The Stuff File with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
Now, The Stuff File presents Andrew Fazekas, the night sky guy. It's radio that's out of this world.
With the start of the new year comes a star-studded evening sky. In fact, January does indeed have a lion's share of brilliant stars, and some of the brightest twinkles up there belong to one famous constellation, Orion the Mythical Hunter. After the Big Dipper, Orion's star-studded figure is probably the most recognizable pattern in the heavens, with its distinctive row of three brilliant stars representing Orion's belt and four surrounding stars marking the shoulders and knees of this giant. This constellation is really easy to find just with the naked eye in the southern skies at night. Marking Orion's left shoulder, however, is a rare super-red giant sun with a funny name. Betelgeuse is one of the largest stars known, close to 1,000 million kilometers across. In fact, if we would replace our sun with Betelgeuse at the center of our solar system, its outer edges would extend out to Jupiter's orbit. That's a really massive star. Although it lies nearly 500 light years away, its orange-red color is striking with the naked eye. Now, astronomers predict it's near the end of its life, and when Betelgeuse explodes, it'll become a supernova in the next 1,000 years or so, and when it does, it's going to outshine the full moon in the night sky. For more cosmic news, visit me online at thenightskyguy.com. I'm Andrew Fazekas, and until next time, clear skies.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook.
Still to come on The Stuff File program, we'll talk a little bit about net etiquette. That's online etiquette to those who are uninitiated. Plus, Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. And, of course, we have an idiot of the day. But right now, we have more stuff. Right here, right now, Raquelm Albanto said, "They call me the human hardware store." This is from his hospital bed in Lima, Peru, that he said that, where doctors removed 1.5 pounds of metal from his stomach, including nails, coins, and rusted copper wire and scrap metal. Surgeon Carlos Delgado said he's never seen anything like what he found in last week's operation. The 26-year-old construction worker apparently ate the metal for months and told local TV reporters that he may now do it in public as sport. He says, "I swallowed 17 nails in February and didn't die. 5-inch nails all in one day." Of course, he later did create a hole in his stomach, which is why he had to have the surgery. Some people will do anything for attention. Meanwhile, police said a woman threatened her husband with a 7-inch knife after he threw away her bottle of vodka as she slept. The husband returned home from work to find his wife sleeping with a bottle of vodka. He threw the bottle away. She woke up, argued with her husband, went back to sleep, then got up again and grabbed a knife from the kitchen to force him to go get her more vodka or give her the car keys. The poor guy held her at bay with a chair while he called 911. She was arrested and found to have a blood alcohol level of 0.23%. I don't want to go out on a limb, but it sounds like somebody has a drinking problem. That's all I'm saying. Let's share a story that talks about the beginning of married life, as opposed to that last story, which is probably the end of married life. In Pembury, England, Tony and Amy West went all out for their wedding cake. They paid $500 for what was supposed to be a 3-tier sponge cake decorated with white and dark chocolate icing and flowers. But just 4 hours before the evening reception was due to start, Amy discovered the cake company had forgotten to bake the cake. Amy said they admitted their mistake and said, "Don't worry, we'll get you a cake." They turned up that evening and the cake was put on the table for all to see. All seemed to be well until the couple cut into the cake and took their first bites together. Turns out the cake was no cake at all, just a bunch of styrofoam covered with icing. Both bride and groom began choking, an experience Amy said was terribly embarrassing. So they took Creative Cakes to small claims court and were awarded $600 compensation. Now, Karen Williams, who runs Creative Cakes, says, "I explained I would be delivering an artificial cake. They are quite common at weddings these days." Really? Not any of the weddings I've been to. Who orders a fake cake? Anyway. Still with London, you know, we often talk about some of the weird laws and wacky things that they do in Britain and ideas that they come up with all the time. A British heritage charity is encouraging employees to help the environment by eschewing indoor toilets and relieving themselves al fresco outdoors. The experiment applies to male gardening staff at Wimpole Hall, just the males now, a stately home about 50 miles north of London. The National Trust, which runs the property, says the staff are being encouraged to urinate on straw, which is then placed on compost heaps. The Trust said that the chemical reaction helps the compost process, while the absence of flushing by 10 members of the staff could cut the estate's water use by almost a third. Officials warn the gardeners to make sure they urinate in spots where they cannot be seen by passers-by. So there you go. Still with England, we go to Oxford, England, for this next story. Police said a group of officers caught on camera using a riot shield as a sled on a snow slope were reprimanded by a superior. Superintendent Andrew Murray, Oxford City Commander with Thames Valley Police, said a bystander captured video of a group of officers arriving at a slope and encouraging a colleague to slide down the hill while clinging to the straps for steering. The video was later uploaded on YouTube, because everything these days is uploaded on YouTube. "The snow has a habit of bringing out the child in all of us," Murray said. "I have spoken to the officers concerned and reminded them, in no uncertain terms, that tobogganing on duty, on police equipment, and at taxpayers' expense, is a very bad idea should they wish to progress under my command." Well, that's a tongue-lashing for you. And you can write your own punchlines for this next story, folks. Members of a church congregation in Rennerstoven, Germany, were interrupted during their morning prayer service by odd noises coming from the organ loft. A woman mounted the stairs and discovered a man and a woman having sex by the organ. The man was recognized as a local policeman who has been suspended. If convicted of disturbance of religious ceremony, the couple faces up to 3 years in prison. The suspension was an immediate measure meant to be a clear sign, a police spokesman said. Further service is currently not welcome. Well, not by the police anyway. I'm sure the woman will have to speak for herself in this regard. Now, we've got a couple of stories here dealing with the internet that I wanted to get to here on the Stuff File program. If you haven't figured it out already, you just can't trust the internet when it comes to interpersonal relationships. You just never know who's really on the other end of the computer. Now, police in Texas have arrested 24-year-old Justin Brown after he spent 2 years tricking would-be male suitors who thought he was a stunning female swimsuit model. Many of his admirers sent him cash and gifts. He posted a fake online profile on the website SeekingMillionaire.com, dubbed as the meeting place for wealthy and beautiful singles. Brown allegedly identified himself as Bree, just looking for Mr. Right, with accompanying photos of a brunette cover girl. He would send suitors fake nude pictures, set up web chats, and even phone conversations using his very feminine voice. The admirers were charmed into sending gifts to Bree, including an iPhone and a small dog. One affluent doctor even handed over nearly $20,000. It all came to a head after the real Bree Condon tracked Brown down to a budget motel room in Austin, Texas, and called police.
Yes.
Meanwhile, in New York, a 19-year-old man who was arrested for armed robbery has been exonerated thanks to a status update he posted on social networking site Facebook. Rodney Bradford was arrested and held for 12 days in connection with an October 17th armed robbery of two people in the Brooklyn housing project where he lives. But he insisted he was in Manhattan at the time of the crime, a claim he backed up by an update he made to his Facebook page from a computer in his father's Manhattan building. A spokesperson for the Brooklyn District Attorney's Office acknowledged that Facebook played a role in the dismissal of the charges. This could be a plot in an upcoming CSI or Law and Order. Wait for it, because you know they like to rip things from the headline for their show. Okay, continuing with computers, let's get to our next guest, especially talking about social networking. You know, millions of people worldwide use social networking sites on a daily basis. This is a new and fast-growing trend, and it's the wave of the future. But how do we address the problem of people letting it all hang out or putting their jobs and relationships at risk? On the line with us right now is Michelle Cimino. She's a digital etiquette expert and the author of Netiquette, Online Etiquette. She also has a website called getmanners.com. Hi, Michelle. How are you?
Hi, Peter. I'm doing great.
Thanks for being on the program with us. So every day we hear stories, and I often talk about them on the air, of people who put things up online or say things on their website and get themselves in trouble, and they seem to be unaware of the fact that they've done something wrong.
That is exactly right. I think a lot of people that are on now forget that what they do now will have consequences in the future, whether it's college admission, whether it's employment opportunities, or just reputation-wise.
Yeah, I'm a little more understandable about the college kids doing things and not thinking about the future, and because, to be honest, if I were an employer sometimes, I don't know if I would hold a lot of people responsible to that. But I'm more concerned about the people who are currently employed and have a Facebook account or use Twitter and are saying things and doing things while they're employed with somebody right now and not understanding the ramifications of that.
Oh, absolutely. I've seen people Twitter that they're calling in sick. And they're gonna go off and do something else. And I mean, sometimes when I read that stuff, I think, did you forget that people could see this? You know, I mean, really, sometimes they just do not think about what they're doing.
Part of the title of your book is the word etiquette. So the other thing about that, too, and of course your website, getmanners.com, is the idea of manners online. Is it a situation, in your estimation, that there's a lack of manners online generally, or that that's the way society as a whole is going, and therefore online is reflecting it?
You know, that's a good question. In my opinion, I feel like there's a lot of freedom on these social sites that people don't take the time to think about how awful their language is. That's one of the things I see, and I think to myself, you know, do you really have to use that kind of language to express yourself? And I don't know if it's just, you know, that's the way it is, and we're just kind of tougher skin now, and we could say things that don't shock people as much. But I think that sometimes even though etiquette sounds like an old-fashioned word, I think sometimes we have to go back in the past a little bit and just kind of censor ourselves a little bit more than we are right now.
Well, do you think that there's a possibility that even though, and in some cases, for instance, like on Facebook, you usually use your real name, but in a lot of social networking situations, people actually use some sort of handle as opposed to a name, or that online people just tend to think that their online persona is not really them. It's a character they portray, and therefore they speak or act differently online than they would in person?
Oh, yeah, I think that's absolutely true. I think there's a lot of people, especially people that like to go after shock value and have a lot of followers and get people's attention. I do think maybe they act out over their social networking opposed to maybe how they would act in real life. And maybe it's part of a fantasy, and there really is some, you know, that false protection when you're pretending to be something that you're not. I think that's kind of sad, personally, if that's kind of the way they're living their life, pretending to be somebody that they're not. But in the same sense, you know, if that's how they want to act out, you know, what can you do?
It's almost like a low-rent version of someone who is actually on a reality television show. They're more than who they really are, or act out more than they really would for the sake of the cameras. Maybe it's the same thing online for the sake of the pixels.
I think you're right. I think, you know, everything's exaggerated and blown up. Just make it more interesting.
What made you write the book, Netiquette, Online Etiquette? Was there a situation for you where you thought push came to shove and this needed to be done?
Yeah, you know, I was seeing more and more. You know, I have two teenage daughters, and, of course, both of them are on social sites, and I kind of realized that between texting and social sites and these kind of things, that it was really, really a huge part of their life. Back when, you know, I was in high school, we would talk on the phone for hours. And so I'm an advocate of it because I do think it's still the socialization that I had as I was a kid. It's just different and more modern. But as I was really starting to look into this stuff and kind of try to set parameters for my kids, what's smart to do, what's not smart to do, these kind of things, I saw some stuff that just shocked the crap out of me, you know, to be honest. It was the language and the pictures and all the girls are trying to be sexy and all the boys are trying to be studs and you know, that's okay, but there has to be a limit. Again, I still think that, you know, you are who you hang out with and we have to have just a little bit of moderation.
So regardless of age, although I'm sure you're primarily talking about young people and teenagers and those in college, but regardless of age, what's the biggest faux pas you think people do online as far as social networking is concerned?
Friending your ex. I have a lot of people call me and ask me, you know, is that a good idea? And the advice that I give them is it kind of depends on where you are in your life right now. If you're in a current relationship with somebody and you feel comfortable telling them that you're going to friend your ex, then I think it's okay. But if you think it's something that you can't share with them, I think you shouldn't do it. So I think that's a big faux pas if you're friending your ex for all the wrong reasons.
Hmm. So it's something you have to clear with your current partner, I guess, as well.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, if you're doing it for the right reasons and maybe you just want to catch up and you want to brag about your kids and your new job and your husband and that kind of stuff and just see what's going on with their life, that's great. But if you're kind of putting your feelers out there to see if maybe they're available, that's probably not a good idea if you're in a relationship with somebody else.
Are most of the online etiquette faux pas, are they relationship-based?
I think so. I mean, most of the mistakes I see are definitely related to relationships. Certain things like putting your status on there. You know, maybe somebody will make a posting that they're going out on a date, and then the very next day they're in a relationship. It's like, whoa, that was fast. And then a couple days later, it's complicated. And then a day after that, they're single. You know, I think, maybe you shouldn't be making a habit of updating that so promptly because it doesn't look all that great. Or, you know, I see arguments between people that are right out in the public for everybody to see, and I think that's a huge faux pas. I mean, I really think that needs to be a private matter. So, yeah, I do think it's a lot of relationship-based.
Is part of the problem the fact that people are instant messaging, and the word there that's important is instant, that sometimes the thumbs are faster than the brain?
Absolutely. I think, you know, it makes us brave. We'll say things, online that we would never have the guts to say face-to-face. And I also tell people that, too, that, you know, you have to read what you're going to say a couple of times before you send it. And that's, again, it's not just a teenager mistake. These are friends of mine that are older than me, and sometimes I get stuff from them. And, you know, it's hard to relay in a text or an instant message a tone. You know, what exactly are you trying to say to me? And I think it there just leaves a, it's a huge line of, how do you communicate and how do you make sense and make sure you're getting your thought across.
And one of the things, I'll end up on this note, one of the things that is, especially with the teenagers, is the idea of sexting. And people have to remember that pictures that are online, in some cases, could be online forever.
That's right. And that is a huge consequence. And, I mean, some of the effects of that stuff have been detrimental. I mean, there's been suicides. There's been criminal charges. I mean, it's been horrible, the damage these kind of pictures can cause. So I caution everybody, never, never, never take a picture of anybody you know inappropriately or forward one. You know, there's plenty of opportunities where people send it to you and you could just stop it right there.
Or even taking pictures of yourself, because some people have done that too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's like probably the most popular form.
Yeah. The book is called Netiquette, Online Etiquette. It's written by Michelle Cimino, and you can also check out her website, which is getmanners.com. Michelle, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thanks, Peter. It was really fun.
Michelle Cimino, author of Netiquette, Online Etiquette. Again, the website is getmanners.com. You could also go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is 0023, and you'll find the links to Michelle's website, plus links to either amazon.com or amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
What are they saying about if the rains don't cleanse? New York Times bestselling author David Mixner says, as a writer and advocate for Africa, I could not put down Ben Patrick Johnson's If the Rains Don't Cleanse. Aubrey Hooks, the U.S. ambassador to Ivory Coast, says, fascinating and hard to put down. If the Rains Don't Cleanse is CNN breaking news disguised as historical fiction. If people can't put it down, then why haven't you picked it up? If the Rains Don't Cleanse, the tale of missionaries in 1950s Belgian Congo is loosely based on my own parents' lives. It's available online, including Amazon.com and Amazon.ca. I, Ben Patrick Johnson, want you to read this book. My mother, Avidale Johnson, wants you to read this book. Now remember, this is a woman who survived as a missionary in Congo half a century ago. She is tough. Now do not make me send her your way. If the Rains Don't Cleanse, get it now, or deal with my mother. From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Now, Peter Anthony Holder once again brings you Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. Lock up your daughters, and in West Virginia, your sheep. Joining Peter Anthony Holder is our intrepid embedded reporter, deep in the heartland of the U.S. of A., Stephen S. Walsh.
How you doing, Steve Areno?
Do you really want the truth?
Yeah, sure.
I've been touched by the flu, my friend.
Ah.
But I'm coming out of it. Yeah. It's not as bad. It still feels when I stand up as though someone is punching me in the gut. Oh, wait a minute. Somebody actually did punch me in the gut. Never mind.
Right. Well, over the years, you've been touched by a lot, so.
Yeah. Some just say I'm touched.
Exactly.
This is true.
Well, we do wish you well soon.
I'm sure I shall return to normal operations in no time at all.
And we are impressed by the fact that your decision to, you know, above and beyond the call of duty, you're being on this program and still going to work. Although going to work, you could be, you know, Missouri Net's version of Typhoid Mary for all we know. You could be infecting
this
the rest
is true,
of the office.
Yes, but the people with whom I work suggested that I take time off, but I said I can't do that. Break my record? Come on.
Yeah. Well, they just want an excuse to get rid of you, Steve. That's what
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure of that.
Yes.
I wasn't sure. Okay. I am committed, and some here would say I should be committed.
Okay.
But that's another story.
Yeah. Well, what do you have for us, sir?
Okay, let's see. Dateline, Joplin, Missouri.
That'd be the show me state.
I live here, you know.
Yes, I know.
Yeah, this is amazing. The Vernon County Sheriff thinks three guys accused of kidnapping a New Jersey businessman and bringing him to Missouri were bumbling idiots. Sheriff Ron Tackman says it appears the trio kidnapped the wrong man. And he says authorities are wondering if they're the same three men who broke into a home in Vernon County and shot the homeowner in the hand. The sheriff says the trio might have broken into the wrong home. New Jersey authorities are trying to get the three men extradited to the Garden State. Bumbling idiots, huh?
Quite.
Yes. I think, you know, I feel so good about the way things are going here in Missouri. We're going to stay in Missouri, okay?
Oh, okay.
All right. Dateline, Springfield, Missouri.
Still the show me state.
Still I live here.
Yep.
10 years now. Coming up on 10 years.
Wow, time
that?
Flies.
Wow. I know. Time flies when your fly's open.
Yep.
Watch out for that tree. And I don't mean the old...
George of the Jungle?
You know, George of the Jungle.
Yeah.
All that stuff. This is in Greene County in southwest Missouri. The Greene County Sheriff's Office says remains found along Interstate 44, which is the old Route 66, basically, last January are those of a man who died in an accident 4 years ago. The remains of 58-year-old Larry Lawrence Abney were identified through an autopsy that determined there was no foul play in his death. Investigators say Abney was living in a makeshift camp sometime after November of 2005 when a large tree fell on his tent and killed him.
Oh, dear.
That's a heck of a way to go.
Yeah.
I could see. Apparently, he wanted to end his lifestyle. He was thinking of branching out, but... Mm.
If a tree falls in the woods and no one is there to say timber, does it still hurt?
Well, I'm wondering if a tree falls along I-44 and kills somebody, does it really count?
Yeah.
Apparently, it does.
Apparently.
I don't know. Let's see. Where are we going now, Peter? Okay. Dateline, St. Cloud, Minnesota.
Oh, that would be the Gopher State.
Or Land of 10,000 Lakes, if you prefer.
Yeah.
An unnamed man, this guy, we don't know his name, he walked into a Target store, as we like to call it here, Target,
mm-hmm.
walked into a Target store and allegedly told store employees he wanted to get into trouble. So he picked up a baseball bat, and he proceeded to smash a 50-inch plasma TV. This turned out to be a very good way of accomplishing his goals, as police quickly arrested him and took him to jail.
Seek and ye shall find.
You have to wonder about the mental fitness of this guy, walking into a Target and smashing a TV like that.
Yes and no. I mean, there are many reasons why people might want to get arrested. It's just similar to the situation, you know, the so-called suicide by cop.
Yes, of course, yes, right.
If people want to get arrested, this is one way to do it.
Absolutely, and clearly he's proven that it worked.
Yeah.
Dateline, Chicago, Illinois.
Oh, the land of Lincoln.
Yeah, sure is. You know, Lincoln used to live there, but he wasn't born there. You know that?
I know.
The two presidents from Ohio, he was born in Kentucky, and the other president was born in Hawaii. So, you know, you got two presidents who both from Illinois, but not where they were born.
And
there was only one president born in Illinois. Do you know who that was?
Ronald Reagan.
Very good. Oh, he's good. But he was from California. He represented California.
Yep.
Anyway, back in November, a Chicago judge ruled that former firefighter Jeffrey Boyle is entitled to his $50,000 annual pension, even though he had pleaded guilty in 2006 to 8 counts of arson and allegedly confessed to 12 more. Boyle is known locally as Matches Boyle to distinguish him from his brother, John Quarters Boyle, who's now in federal prison for bribery following the theft of millions of dollars in state tollgate coins. Judge Leroy Martin Jr. concluded that Matches arsons were wholly separate from his firefighting.
Hmm. You know, there is some truth to nicknames, really.
He's a hero.
Yeah.
He's a hero, Peter. He's a hero. Matches is a hero.
Yeah, and there is some truth to nicknames.
It's a good thing he didn't have, you know, he wasn't itching himself all over. They'd be scratches. And it's a good...
And you don't want to scratch a boil.
We're going to stay up there in that land of the Windy City, shall we?
Okay.
Dateline, Chicago, Illinois again.
Still land of Lincoln.
Again. Some situations, you know, Peter, are nail biters. This one's a nipple biter. An off-duty cop was allegedly bitten in the chest just last week. At about 9:30 p.m., 31-year-old Fernando Cooper and an off-duty officer got into a physical confrontation outside Gibson's Bar and Steakhouse. Police who witnessed the event say the officer identified himself, but the other man didn't back down and continued to assault the cop. Along with several punches that caused cuts to the officer's eye, the man also severely bit the cop's nipple. Both the suspect and the cop were treated for cuts and bruising to their faces. However, a doctor said that the bite on the officer's chest was so severe, the cop lost a body part, according to the report. Cooper has been charged with attempting to disarm a peace officer and aggravated battery to a peace officer, both felonies. Talk about getting something off your chest. Boy, tell you, if that happened to me...
You'd be angry?
Man, would I be angry.
I can imagine.
But I'm like, I know, but unlike some people who you know, deal with their anger by hitting people or something like that, I just take keyboard in hand and I write a two-minute tirade, and I've written one. May I?
Tirade away.
Certainly I shall. This time I want to talk about people who call and block their phone numbers. You know the ones. You see them when the phone rings. The caller ID feature usually shows a name of someone with whom you're in regular contact, or at least a number if the caller is someone you might not deal with on a regular basis. Then you have the callers who block their numbers, and you get the message, number unknown. Well, I, for one, have a way of dealing with those people who think they're too important to have the people they're calling know their numbers. I no longer answer the phone. I have opted for this and have encouraged others to do the same. Sure, it's been suggested by some of those people that an important call might be missed if the number unknown call is not answered. My response is very simple. If it's important enough, the caller will leave a name and number, and you have the option of returning the call or ignoring it. Most choose not to leave a name or a number because it's often a call from someone selling something or wanting money for one cause or another. And let's face it, no one who wants your money will leave a message for you to call so that you can be badgered for your money. Let the word go out from this place and time. If you want me to answer your call, don't block your phone number. And if you're calling from another phone over which you have no control, leave a name and a number for me. Barring that, I have one thing to say to you. Enjoy my voicemail message. That's as close as you'll get to hearing from me.
The number you have dialed is no longer in service.
Yeah, I've had that a couple of times, and I think I know who it is.
Me.
Or not it's, who it's, in the organization. It's, somebody looking for money.
It's usually me, actually.
No, it's not you.
Okay.
I just won't put up with it. It's something up with which I will not put, Peter.
I understand.
I understand.
People, by the way, can find you by going to www.missourinet.com. That's www.missourinet.com. And they could also check, well, they can go to my website at thestufffile.com and find the links to you there. But, sir, I would like you to say those three magic words before you say goodbye.
Certainly. Hit the theme!
This is The Stuff File.
And we're almost done with this edition of The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. We have an Idiot of the Day coming your way in just a matter of moments. But first, a couple of stories I want to share with you under the headline, Fun with Motor Vehicles. The first one being, Fail to Keep a Low Profile. A news summary of traffic stops on Christmas Eve in Alice Springs, Australia, noted that 11 people were charged with DUI, including one man who was spotted driving despite his car's hood being broken in the up position and having smashed through his windshield. The driver maneuvered down the street by craning his neck out the side window. Yeah, no one would notice that. Of course not. Meanwhile, in Roseville, California, a 28-year-old driver apparently became startled when his hands-free cell phone went off in his car. So I guess hands-free cell phones can also be dangerous behind the wheel. It caused him to veer off the road and suddenly plunge into Pleasant Grove Creek. But he managed to escape the sinking vehicle by whipping out his handgun and blasting out the window. Turns out the guy was an armed security guard who was off duty. In East Brunswick, New Jersey, police are making sure one young man is getting everything that's coming to him. Police began to pursue the man for suspicious behavior after they saw him driving erratically, but the suspect suddenly left the vehicle and jumped off the New Jersey Turnpike. Turns out that was not a good idea at all. He broke both legs upon landing, and now he's being charged with resisting arrest, eluding police, and, because we wouldn't want to leave anything out, toll evasion. They're charging him with toll evasion. That'll teach him. As dumb as that is, believe it or not, that's not the idiot of the day. This is.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This stuff all presents the idiot of the day.
Two 17-year-old girls taking pictures of a quarry in Perth, Scotland for a photography class were approached by a man who demanded that they take his photo. The suspicious girls walked away from the man, who then called out, "How about this then?" And they looked back to see that he had dropped his pants. One of the quick-thinking girls snapped photos for evidence with her cell phone camera. The man realized what a bad idea this was and chased after them and grabbed the mobile phone to try to erase the shots. The girls managed to escape with the phone, and police identified him from the photos. Ewan Brand, age 49, was sentenced to 3 years of probation and ordered to register as a sex offender and also ordered to pay each girl £250, that's about $410 U.S., for their distress. "It's usually a bit of fun," Brand complained in court, adding, "I didn't have my trousers down when I was running after them." Yeah, that makes all the difference in the world. It's official, Ewan. You're an idiot.
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Hope you've enjoyed it. That's show number 0023. You can check the website, which is thestufffile.com, and stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's thestufffile.com, where you'll find information and links on our guests on the What's On page. Just look for the corresponding date and program number, and as mentioned, it's 0023, this program is. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook at facebook.com/PAHolder and Twitter at twitter.com/PAHolder. We hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com and World FM 88.5 FM in New Zealand. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. No animals were harmed in the production of this program, except, of course, the tasty ones. Good night and pass the paprika.